everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and we are now less than 2 weeks away from training camp as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 65. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with Andy Benoit from the MMQB. Andy does some great All-22 analysis all year round, and he wrote a piece a few weeks back on Vinny Curry, so I thought, let's bring Andy on, talk about Curry, but also the entirety of this defensive front and how they may be a little bit better against the run than people give them credit for. We're going to stay on defensive two technique, where I caught up with one of the media's favorite players from this past spring, rookie defensive back Jalen Mills, to talk about how to play to your help inside as a slot defender, a role Mills is very familiar with during his time at LSU. Then we wrap it all up in Saturday scouting with some notes on rookie pass rusher Alex McAllister. We've got a ton to get into, so let's not waste any time. I caught up with MMQB's Andy Benoit. Let's get to that interview right now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Very happy to be joined this week by the MMQB's Andy Benoit. And Andy, you can follow him on Twitter at Andy_Benoit. He always drops very valuable nuggets of all 22 info throughout the week of film study in season. It's always really interesting to get some of the insight there from Andy. Andy, appreciate the time here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast.
My pleasure, Fran. I'm glad to be doing this.
Awesome. Well, a few weeks back, you wrote an article about Vinny Curry. I know you were here towards the end of minicamp. You got to visit with Vinny and talk to him a little bit. And I know you did some research on Vinny, going back and looking at how he did last year in 2015 in a completely different scheme. For fans that didn't catch that piece, what was the gist? What were you trying to get forward with that piece on Vinny?
Well, Vinny Curry has been a very good nickel three technique for the most part. He's played other positions, but his best damage inflicted comes from that inside, that defensive tackle position, out of the nickel package and passing situations. And I think he has the physical skill set to become an every down force, a dynamic player in the right scheme. Now, in the previous scheme under Billy Davis, he was fine as a nickel rusher where you're trying to get up the field, but on first and second down and more base situations on running downs, Davis played a two-gap type system with gap exchange concepts, a totally different approach than just, hey, put your hand in the dirt and fire off the ball. So the defensive line had different assignments that did not fit Curry's style of play, and so he didn't get the playing time. With Jim Schwartz, the style of play is going to be more similar to what you already do in nickel. It's going to be, hey, get off the ball, shoot the gap, whether it's the running down or a passing down, and certainly you'll play them a little bit differently. But the point is, a guy with good initial get-off and short area movement skills, which is what Vinny Curry offers, a guy like that has fit really well for this game. So Curry has an opportunity to earn more playing time. He's gotten paid, so he doesn't have to worry about that. But I think if he gets the playing time, and that's an if, because there are other guys on that line that are worthy of snaps as well. But if he gets that, I think he has a chance to be one of the breakout defensive linemen of this season.
Andy, you've checked out this Jim Schwartz scheme now going back for however many years that he's been orchestrating this defensive scheme. What do you think Vinny Curry's ceiling is in this kind of system where, obviously, look, you're asking him to come off the ball. You talked about some of the other players along that defensive line. Obviously, Fletcher Cox got paid a great deal of money. He's going to be a great disruptor up front as well. And you have Connor Barwin and Brandon Graham. But where is Vinny Curry's ceiling at from a production standpoint in this scheme in your mind?
The ceiling's pretty high. It will. You got to decide whether he's going to be a defensive end in the base situations or a defensive tackle. My guess is he would be a defensive end, especially with Benny Logan and Fletcher Cox there. You're not going to get those guys off the field on first and second down. I think the ceiling is high. It'll be interesting to see how they use him, though. because you do have the gap shooting element, but it's not just straight rushing up the field on every single snap. There's also twists and stunts and games to account for where you're picking off blockers to set up other guys. Curry is very good in that facet, but where will he be doing it from? Is he going to be coming from the D tackle and looping outside, looping inside? They'll do all of it, but what will be his niche? Those are the kind of things that have to be sorted out. But everything we're talking about here, Fran, he has the physical tools and skill set to do that. It's just a matter of whether he has the mental makeup to flourish in that kind of a scheme, if he can adjust to it mentally.
When Jim Schwartz was hired in January, one of the taboo terms kind of thrown around, it gave Eagles fans shudders thinking back to 2012 and 2011, was the wide nine, the quote-unquote wide nine. And Jim Schwartz was one of the first to dispel and say, look, you know, I'll run a number of different fronts. It's not just a wide nine. And you go and you watch, and obviously you watch the tape, you know it's not just a wide nine, and, you know, down in, down out, and focus solely on attacking the quarterback. But one of the things that plagued those defenses back in 2011 and 2012 was attacking the run and defending the run. So I wanted to talk to you about just run fits in general and what that means for a defense and how it's not just up to the defensive line, it's not just up to the linebackers, it's really kind of a team effort to really stop the run. So just a quick summation before we get into the different schemes and the different factors that play into it, what is a run fit? What do fans need to know about a run fit?
Well, a run fit essentially is a defender's gap responsibility, the little area of the field in relation to the offense that the defender is technically accountable for, A gap, B gap, C gap, etc. So that's run fits. Now, the thing about them that's hard to, what makes them hard to decipher at times, is they're very fluid. The ball snaps and the gaps move because the players move. So responsibilities can change. And with a scheme like Schwartz, the run fits are a little more straightforward because the scheme's inherently more straightforward, a 4-3. With Billy Davis, the run fits had more dimension to them. They were a little more convoluted because the defense was also changing so much. They would line up in one formation, but the run fits would not correlate with the way they lined up. It was a disguise. And you don't see that a lot in the NFL. But if you've got the right guys to play it, you can play it. I thought they did have the right guys, and it worked under Davis. Now, it didn't work for the bigger picture of the whole defense, and that's a different discussion. But in short, run fits are a defender's area of responsibility in relation to the guys around him. And the thing to keep in mind is all this stuff is fluid with the snap of the ball.
So that's really, when you get down to it, everyone now is becoming familiar with the term one gap versus two gap and what that means for the defensive line. But that's really what it comes down to, is the run fit, how it relays to defending the run. So all these guys up front are asked to defend one gap as opposed to defending two. Are there any other big differences? And obviously a lot of teams run a little bit of both on every single play, but are there any other big differences that you'll notice going from two gap to one gap and the differences in the scheme?
Well, first, and I think people might understand this, but it's always good to clarify the basics, because that's where ultimately this stuff is all very basic once you remember it all. If you're playing two gaps, you're not firing off the ball because you're basically standing guard and having to react to one gap or the other. You also have to be more powerful because you can't. No guy is wide enough to fill two gaps, and so you've got to fill one gap with your body and then grab the offensive lineman and displace him into the other gap and clog it. So that's one style of play. And then the one gap, you fire up and shoot off the ball and try to penetrate and get in the backfield. So with that in mind, the linebackers have to react differently to this. Behind the two-gap scheme, it's a little more read and react, and I think there's a little more margin for error with those linebackers. The bodies, the blockers, aren't able to get up to the second level to block them as quickly because the defensive line is trying to hold those guys rather than get past those guys. With one gap, there is the penetration. So in theory, I think offensive linemen can reach the linebackers quicker. And Fran, this gets into the issue that I think people had with the wide nine, is that when they were running that a few years ago and it wasn't working, they didn't have a very good linebacking core. They had Moises Fokeu, they had Jamar Chaney in there, Brian Roll, Casey Matthews, Akeem Jordan. We're listing off a lot of backups and special teamers that were trying to play in the base defense. And so there was a lot of pressure on the linebackers. If you're in a wide nine, the gap can be a little bigger on the edges, so the linebackers have more ground to cover. You've got to have decent linebackers to make the whole thing work. Now, this linebacking core with Jordan Hicks, Michael Kendrick, even Nigel Bradham, that's a lot more speed and athleticism there. So I think the concern needs to be tempered a little bit because of the guys you have playing behind the defensive line now.
How much more stress does it put, Andy, on the safety position? Because I know that was one issue that popped up as well in 2011, 2012, was that the safeties always felt that they were in kind of in a bind, more so than typical from run pass, you know, and trying to decipher, okay, where are my keys? What am I reading? Is this actually going to be a run play, or am I going to be dropping back into the deep part of the field? How much more stress, when you play that one gap style, does it put on the safeties?
Well, that really gets into the coverage is what drives that. So if you're in a single high coverage with one safety in center field and the strong safety rolling down, then that strong safety is essentially a fourth linebacker, and he's got gap responsibilities accordingly. If you're going to play cover two, however, then the safeties don't even have run fit responsibilities. Technically, the cornerbacks are the furthest, widest run defenders because they press at the line of scrimmage, but they don't carry with the wide receiver, so they stay up near the line of scrimmage, and they have outside run contain. Now, to take it a step further, a lot of cover two looks to split safeties or two safeties back deep, those are actually quarters coverages where each defender, cornerback, safety, safety, cornerback, is taking one-fourth of the field. And if you're going into quarters coverage, then the safety does have the run fit responsibility because he becomes the widest run defender in the equation because the quarterbacks have to drop back and run with the wide receivers in that coverage. So there's a lot of variation. It's complicated, but it's simple to players. These are basic coverages. But to answer your question, what the safety's run responsibilities are, that will be primarily dictated by what kind of coverage Jim Short wants to play. And my guess is he'll certainly play all three of these, cover three or single high, cover two and quarters or cover four. He'll play all that because everybody plays all of that. But what becomes his foundation is the key, and that will probably come down to how much he trusts his cornerback. The more he trusts them, the more likely it is to be cover four. The less he trusts them, the more likely it is to be cover two.
So then looking at the personnel, you look at this safety duo, and Jim Schwartz had talked about this spring during minicamp and OTAs about that safety tandem. You have Malcolm Jenkins, you've got Rodney McLeod. Eagles fans are very, very familiar with Malcolm Jenkins, and now they're starting to get the buzz, I think, on Rodney McLeod. During your film study, watching the Rams for the last few years, what does Rodney McLeod bring to the table, and how well do you think he fits in this scheme? Because remember, he came from a scheme in L.A., that's the same coaching tree as Jim Schwartz. So there's some similarities there from scheme to scheme as well.
Yeah, McLeod, there are coaches in the NFL this offseason who played against McLeod and told me they thought he was second in the league at his position only to Earl Thomas, his position being a true free safety, a deep center fielder, a single high safety, what have you. I did not disagree with those coaches. McLeod is rangy. He's adept in space. He has excellent body control. His ball skills are adequate. And when you have a safety like that, then you can be more flexible and more aggressive schematically because what coaches all fear the most on defense is just giving up the big play. A guy like Rodney McLeod gives you really good, trustworthy insurance against the big play, and so you become more aggressive. And you mix Rodney McLeod with someone like Malcolm Jenkins, who's very versatile in pretty much every facet you can think of, and now you can be aggressive and deceptive in your concept. So I thought McLeod was the best free agent acquisition in the NFL this year, considering bang for the buck and a guy filling a need. And I would expect the rest of that defense to be a lot better just because he's there providing security now.
And then last thing, Andy, when you look at from a pressure standpoint, when teams look to blitz, how does that then affect also the run fits? Because obviously, even though you're blitzing, there's still a threat of the run play, and you want to make sure that gaps are accounted for. So when you're watching teams and you're watching film all year round, how do you see the pressure aspect also affect the run game?
Well, a lot of times if you're blitzing, you're expecting it to be a pass. And so the run can be either the blitzers are going to get in the running back's path, but if they don't, if it's a draw play and someone blitzes and gets out of the gap, you've got a problem there because now your second-level defenders have just run down towards the line of scrimmage and the ball's headed zooming right out past the line of scrimmage. So when you see blitzes that work against the run, they tend to be more from the edge. They're safer run-type blitzes where you're trying to close the gap sooner on the perimeter, and you can't really close the gap sooner inside because defenders already align in those gaps. And so to blitz against the run effectively comes from eating up space, and you do it before the snap. A good example, Fran, a lot of teams, and it's a great way to defend the read option, a lot of teams like to blitz their slot cornerback against that because it takes care of that outer edge gap, and if they do pass, the slot cornerback's usually going to come in clean anyway. So it's a safer type of blitz that you can call on early downs. That's just one example. The run blitzes are going to be inherently safer than the pass blitzes.
Andy Benoit, you can follow him on Twitter at Andy_Benoit from the MQB. Appreciate the time, as always, here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure.
Great stuff again from Andy, and you can follow him on Twitter just like I do, at Andy_Benoit. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. You know I really appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on social media. That's one way to support the show. The other is to go on iTunes, go on Stitcher, give us a rating, even leave us a comment. I love when everybody out there goes on, leaves us a comment or a question, and we can answer it here on the show. And it's also a great way to support the podcast. So thanks to all of you out there for your continued support of the show and all of the rest of our podcast offerings here on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. Let's keep this show going, though. I told you earlier that we would jump into the locker room to talk with Jalen Mills about how to play to your help in the secondary. Let's get to that conversation in Two Technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Here now with Eagles defensive back Jalen Mills. And Jalen, I wanted to talk to you today about playing in the slot and what it means to play to your help inside. First, in layman's terms, what does it mean to play to your help?
Just playing to your help. You know, you may have a quicker, faster guy in the slot. You know, if that's the case, I need to know first what's the call, what's the down and distance, and where's the guys split. You know, if he's inside, then I may need to be an outside leverage. Or if he's outside, I may need to get an inside leverage. So I may get helped by the safety on the inside leverage. I may get helped by my linebacker on the outside leverage. You know, so that total part right there, really having to know the game and know your playbook and down the distance as well. I mean, it plays a total part in having a great snap. And that's just one snap. And you may have to do that the whole game.
And it's interesting. Fans don't necessarily know that. I mean, you're talking about a difference of a foot and a half in terms of pre-snap. Tell us just in terms of the pre-snap alignment, what goes into that in terms of playing to your help?
Pre-snap alignment, you know, say I'm going against Sam in practice, you know, and I may have Nelson in the slot. You know, if I know I need to be inside before the snap count, and I may thinking of a route that's coming, I may line up outside, you know, so they'll check to maybe that inside route. You know, and before the snap, you know, I'll have to jump the inside. But for sure, I will have to tell my safety that so he won't think that I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I may tell him, hey, look, I'm going to line up outside first, and I'm going to jump inside. So if he does run anything outside, you can help me. You know, so that for sure, that plays a big part in it.
On the rare occasion that you don't have any help, what are you thinking? What's going through your mind? You're playing in the slot, and you've got no help inside. What's going through your mind?
That's when your technique comes in, you know. Technique beats anything, any time of day. Strength, speed, technique beats it, you know. So that just comes with technique and knowing, like I said, where the guy's leverage is. You know, if the receiver's outside, he may run in breaking routes. If he's inside, he may run an out breaking route. You know, so really knowing your technique and where you are on the field.
Outstanding stuff there from Jalen. He did a great job breaking down how to play to your help. So I'm going to quickly break down how to subscribe to a podcast. And if you're listening to this on the Eagles app or on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and you like what you hear, it is so easy. You just go onto your mobile device, whether it's your smartphone or your tablet, you find your local podcast app and you search Eagle Eye in the Sky, you hit subscribe, and now this show will download automatically to your phone each and every week, and you can listen whenever and wherever you want, when you're working out, when you're going for a swim, when you're walking your dog, when you're petting your cat, when you're driving down the shore, when you're driving home from the shore. That's the best part. You can listen whenever and wherever you want. And while you're at it, you can check out all of our other podcast offerings, whether it's Dave Spadaro and the Eagles Live podcast, Chris McPherson and Alex Smith will be returning soon with the Eagles Insider podcast, and the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA will be coming back also in just a few short weeks. I'm also on the College Draft Podcast with former NFL offensive lineman Ross Tucker. There's a ton of great podcasts out there. You just have to know where to look. Enough about that, though. Let's wrap up this show with Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, so this week in Saturday Scouting, I wanted to look at rookie pass rusher Alex McAllister. And when you go back and look at my notes on him from this past spring, 6'0", 6'1", 239 pounds. So 6'6" and 1/8 inches, very tall, good length for the position, 36-inch long arms. And now I can say that that's great length, but really you don't really understand until you see the context. And only two edge rushers in the last 5 years have been drafted that have longer arms than McAllister. So that shows you the kind of wingspan you're dealing with the rookie from Florida. It's also worth noting, too, that his short shuttle time of 4 seconds flat is the best of any edge rusher drafted in that same span. So it was better than Bruce Irvin. It was better than Vic Beasley, Khalil Mack, Anthony Barr, Ziggy Ansah, a lot of really talented prospects, guys that went in the first round that have come on into the NFL and made a lot of plays so far because of their athletic ability. It shows you the kind of bend, the kind of flexibility, the quickness, the change of direction. That short shuttle time of 4 seconds flat from McAllister out the combine was really, really impressive. You get a sense of what kind of an athlete this kid is. And now you get to the notes. He lined up as a defensive end in their 4-3 and as an outside linebacker in their 3-4. So they played a multiple front there at Florida with defensive coordinator Jeff Collins this past year. Typically was lined up as a 7 or as a 9 technique outside the right tackle or the tight end on the outside. Displayed a solid burst coming off the ball. He's not overly explosive, but he can threaten the edge. Showed great flexibility turning the corner, using that shoulder fake to dip and rip through tackles off the edge. As a pass rusher, his go-to move was the rip move, and he complemented that with an effective long arm rush, you know, mixed in a bull rush, a hand swipe, a spin move, but that was his go-to move. And actually, you remember a couple weeks ago, I talked to him about that move, that ability to bend and turn the corner, rip through the tackle in Tuke technique a couple weeks ago here on the podcast. So you know that he can win from the outside as a speed rusher, high side, as I like to say. He's got the speed to close when he turns it on. He looks good in the open field when he hits his stride. He's an impact tackler, an explosive hitter at the point of contact. Occasionally, he was asked to even play man-to-man coverage against tight ends. Has the ability to do that, even though his eyes got caught in the wrong place a couple times. Still showing that athleticism, that ability to drop in coverage. He won't be asked to do it too much, I wouldn't think, in this defense, but just to see what kind of an athlete he is, again, at 6'6", 240 pounds, is really impressive. Now, for negatives, false steps a little bit in his get-off at times, and that negates his strong first step. So if you're a little bit late coming off the ball, that doesn't help you when trying to beat those tackles at the snap. He'll greatly benefit from an NFL weight room, can get controlled at the point of attack at sometimes in the run game, doesn't get much movement with his bull rush. So I wanted to see him get stronger. He can get stuck on blocks a little bit, and I thought his motor ran a little bit hot and cold, but overall, he's got the ability to provide value as a sub-rusher in the NFL right now and down the road. I didn't necessarily see a full-time starter when I watched him, but again, if he can get stronger and improve his hand use, he can develop into a very effective NFL pass rusher. So thanks again to Andy, to Jalen Mills, and all of you out there listening, whether you're on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and of course on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And again, if you get the time, rate the show, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, shoot us a question. I want to hear from everybody out there and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go shoot us a comment and we can keep making this show better each and every week. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. From my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.